everybody. Welcome back. Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS Podcast. I'm Dan Malin, joined by Matt Sells. We are getting this podcast in very early on a Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So, Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. We just decided this timing worked out well for both of us. May as well just get it done and out there earlier. There will be no, if you're listening to this as it comes out, there will be no DFS rankings this week. I kind of feel like they're a little bit useless for Talladega week.
Practice notes.
Yeah, just like even if we had had the one practice that had originally been scheduled before they canceled it, I would not have done practice notes for that because they're just useless for Talladega. So
it's like dialogue in a porno.
Yeah, pretty much. it's just, you know, the rate of crashing here is so high that I can't in good confidence tell you where everybody confidently ranks in cash or, you know, GPPs, everybody's in play. We'll just get that out of the way right off the bat. Cash games, there is definitely a strategy to it, but also the rankings may not hold and then, you know, it doesn't really work out so well. So
I made similar notes in the Xfinity playbook that, you know, just because I didn't list certain drivers doesn't mean that they're off the table or they're not in play. There could be guys that I put in the example lineups that just weren't in the playbook. It's really all about, you know, like you're going to, if you've never played NASCAR DFS, this isn't the best week to really try it for the first time. And I understand, like, when we get Daytona and Talladega, we're going to get the bigger GPP contests, especially on DraftKings.
Yeah, there's like a $1.25 million prize pool.
Yeah,
it's the contest this week.
It's a $20 buy-in. It's 250 grand to first, and it's a massive field, and it's dangerous because, like, you're going to have guys that you never really see finish in the top 10. Like, Corey LaJoy always has really good fortune with Talladega.
Brendan Gong, who Brendan only Kahn, races four only races, races a year.
He only does Talladega in daytime. I mean, Ryan Preece finished third at Talladega last spring, so you're going to see guys – you know, like,
hey, Fantasy Omega, now is your chance to play Timmy Hill.
Yeah, and I put that in the Xfinity playbook. I acknowledge Fantasy Omega because he's that guy's always asking about Timmy Hill.
Yeah, now's your chance because legitimately he could wind up with a top five.
Yeah. But definitely, like, you know, last week, Miami and Martinsville and a couple weeks ago with Atlanta, those are better weeks to really get in on DFS. Next week with Pocono, we've got a doubleheader with Cup races. But you know, if you're playing this week, play it light. I'm throwing five lineups into DraftKings big GPP, and that's really it. So I'm actually playing a little more Xfinity just because I've done more research for that one. But yeah, this is a week to go light. I hate Daytona, Talladega, and Bristol for DFS. Love to watch it, but I hate these races for DFS.
I'm there with you. When we were at Daytona last July, it was really exciting experience. It was fantastic, and then the big one happened, and you literally watch your money go up in smoke.
Yeah,
like just literally Justin in Haley. One. Yeah, Justin Haley, who was going off at, like, I don't know, he was like 700-1 odds to win it before the race started or something like that. He was like really, really long shot odds. He wound up winning only because Kurt Busch made a ill-timed pit stop. But yeah, these kind of races just have so much crashing that Dan had a tweet earlier this week that was hashtag accurate is how I responded to it. Print off pictures of every driver in the field, put them up on a dartboard, blindfold yourself, and throw darts. Throw five or six darts, depending on the site you're playing on, and that's the lineup you should go with. Because
and there's,
like, I hate to get on a podcast and tell you this, but, like, I mean, clearly, look at the track breakdown. It does do a pretty good job of showing you who's done well, who's not done so well, who are the cheaper guys you should target. There's some strategy notes in there. There will be a full playbook. you know, it'll be and like Dan said, just because a guy's not in a playbook doesn't mean you can't play him.
Right.
Like, literally, if you read the track breakdown, I said in the fade section, there's really nobody to fade this week. You're just going to want to go light on some starting positions. But other than that, no, I can not tell you to fade anybody because literally anything can happen.
And that's not to say that there aren't guys that will be heavier on. There are really good restrictor plate racers. Yeah. The issue is that aside from the fact that a third of the field could wreck and not finish the race.
Well, more than that.
Possibly.
2 years ago at Talladega, I think a grand total of 12 cars finished the race.
Yeah.
Out of a 40-car field. So that's what you're up against. Not saying that's going to happen again. It could be everybody finishes. I doubt that. But
this is also a race where the cars are almost on a level playing field.
Mm-hmm. So. They're specifically, the reason it's called a plate track, for those of you who are new to NASCAR, they, a while ago now, like several years, like, I don't know, we're talking into a decade and a half ago, they put a plate in the engine of the car that's called a restrictor plate, and essentially it restricted the horsepower of the car so that everybody would be going essentially the same top speed. And it was so that they could actually control better the top speeds that these guys hit, because otherwise they'd be super, super dangerous. Like, for example, before the restrictor plates were in the engines, who set the speed record? I want to say Bill Elliott, but I don't know if it is actually Bill Elliott. But the highest speed ever recorded in a cup car happened at Talladega, and it's well over 210 miles an hour. And they were like, we can't have guys racing at 210 miles an hour. That's insane. So we're going to restrict the horsepower so they'll go slower. Well, when you restrict the horsepower, that puts everybody on an even playing field. So you get a lot of side-by-side racing. You get a lot of what they call pack racing. Drafting is a huge part of this race. And the side effect of that is when you have 40 guys driving it, you know, they're still going to go into turn one at about 202 miles an hour. When you have 40 guys going 200 miles an hour and somebody's car gets hit the wrong way by wind, or somebody has an itch and they twist the wheel slightly, it can cause a big problem because you got a lot of people right next to you and nobody can really get out of the way. So that's kind of why the crashes happen. Big here and at Daytona, but it also has to do with the size of the track and the speeds they're carrying and stuff like that. So this is a wild race for DFS, to be sure.
Yeah. All right. Just a couple programming notes. Playbook will be out Saturday. Xfinity playbook's out now. Xfinity example lineups will be out 4 p.m. Eastern time Saturday. No practice notes. Really, it's just the playbook, I guess, we're waiting on, correct?
Yeah, it'll be the playbook on Saturday at some point. Hopefully, it'll be out earlier this week than it has been in the past. There's a lot going on over here. I'm a man of many hats, so there is a lot going on. We have had some inquiries in chat about a lineup generator. There is supposed to be one this week. We will see if we can get it out in time for the race, although I will be frank with you, I don't know that you need one for the Talladega race.
I'd rather throw darts.
Because you're going to have to tweak it so much to get like the random lineups you want. But that's besides the point. If you want to use it, I will try to give you a status update on it throughout the weekend. It's in its final tweaks here. But yeah, so the playbook will be out Saturday at some point. There's no DFS rankings this week. And then lineups will be out Sunday. Probably about 90 minutes before lock. And one tip here about the lineups, as you'll see when the example lineups come out, leave money on the table this week. And when I say leave money on the table, I mean thousands of dollars of salary on the table.
Yeah, I currently just made a really quick cash lineup, and it has $7,800 left over.
Yeah, that's about where my cash lineup is probably going to be. It'll be about 8,000 to 10,000 left over in the cash lineup. Because I can promise you this, unless something absolutely bizarre happens, the winning lineup will almost assuredly have at least $8,000 left on the table.
Yeah.
By the end of the race. That's just the way it works. Because, like we said, the crashes really help you out with place differential here. So.
Well, I guess with that said, do you want to just start breaking down drivers? Because as much as we may joke and have fun and say, like, you know, everybody's in play, like, there are drivers that we can look at and feel pretty good about.
Oh, and also programming note, in the playbook this week, I am switching up that lovely table, the average points by starting position chart or table that you all have gotten used to. I'm switching that up. It's going to be a bar graph with an average line across it, so it's much easier to see which starting spots go above the average point scored and which ones flounder down around where you don't want to be. So it should be a lot clearer of a picture, also less stuff to scroll through in order to get down to the playbook. So that's a little bit of a switch, but I think you'll find it quite helpful this week, especially with the strategy that's involved here, where you basically pick one guy starting up in the top 10. You pick maybe one guy starting in the middle of the pack, and then everybody else is like 28th or worse.
Yeah.
And then you just hope for crashes and your guys aren't in it.
And then I guess one final note for me is that I'm not going to be in the chat on Sunday.
Nope, because Dan is going to be going to the race.
I got very lucky. I was very fortunate to wake up from a nap on Monday and see that they were selling 5,000 tickets.
Oh, you mean the lucky part wasn't that you got to take a nap on Monday?
You know what, Matt? If you ever need some help, I'm available. But I got lucky. I live within 150 miles of the track, and I guess that was the cutoff point. So I may jump on my phone as it gets closer to lineup lock or whatever, and I'll help out. But for the most part,
I will give you a tip that there's not a whole lot of cell reception near Talladega Super Speedway. Our good friend Garage Guys Chase went there, has gone there a couple of the last 2 years, and his cell phone was not really working so well. Now, I will say that was a fully packed Talladega, so you might have better luck that there's only going to be 5,000 people at the track.
Yeah.
Less usage of cell phones, but I'll give you that heads up.
But I'll be taking pictures if anyone wants to follow along on Twitter. I'll be posting videos as well, but I won't be in the chat, unfortunately. But with that said, you want to just start talking drivers?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk drivers. I don't know that doing it by team is necessarily... I guess we could start that way.
Yeah, but we could start with Penske.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly the top... that's clearly the top team when you come to a plate track.
Penske breeds some of the best plate racing drivers in cars. So Joey Logano starting ninth, 10,200. Brad Keselowski is arguably the best plate racer in the whole circuit, I guess. He's starting sixth at 9,600, which is a great price. Ryan Blaney, after weeks of being severely underpriced, under 9,000, he is up at 10,100. He won this race last fall, and he's rolling off P12, the lowest starting spot among the top tier drivers based on owner's points. They're all in play. I mean, there's really no questions.
Nope, they flat out dominate this track. Logano and Keselowski by themselves, I think, have won five of the last eight or five of the last nine Talladega races. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you throw in Blaney there, so that gives them basically like six of the last nine or six of the last 10 Talladega races that Penske has won. In general, Fords have been very dominant at Talladega over the last 10 races here. 80% of the wins have come from Ford, which isn't all that shocking considering the fact that Team Penske dominates here. But also, there's been some SHR guys that have done pretty well as well. So if we want to get into the weeds a little bit, Fords do better because of their front end. They have a flatter front end. So when they hook up to draft and push each other, it's easier for them to get a clean push as opposed to Chevy, which has a pointed front end. It makes it tougher for them to like line up properly, because that's the other problem, is if you're slightly askew when you try to push somebody, you're going to get them to twist, kind of like what happened to Ryan Newman at Daytona. So, and then there's been no wins from Toyota in the last 10 races here.
Which is kind of strange, because Denny Hamlin has had a lot of success recently at Daytona, but it just hasn't translated to Talladega.
Nope. And Kyle Busch is if you look at Kyle Busch's numbers here, they're pretty solid, but he doesn't have a win here in the last 10 races. But he's got a couple of top five finishes. You know, he's pretty solid. So basically anybody from Penske is in play. You can stack manufacturers and you can stack teams this week.
It's actually a really good idea, because they usually pit around the same time, right?
Right, yeah. Usually you will see Fords come in together to pit. You'll see Chevys come in to pit. And Toyota will either come in together or they will come in with one of those, because there's only usually five or six of them on the track, and it's much tougher to keep the draft if, you know, there's only six cars coming up as opposed to half the field being in the other part of the draft. So stacking manufacturers and stacking teams is perfectly acceptable this week. But that being said, I would still only likely play two of the Penske guys tops. Like, that would be my two pay-ups, and everybody else would be starting in the back of the pack.
Okay. I don't know. I guess I'll bounce to JGR really quick, only because I find it interesting that they're starting 1, 2, and 3. Martin Truex Jr. on the pole. Only 9,000. I mean, these JGR drivers are cheap this week. I mean, sure, they range from $9,000 to $9,300. And then you got Eric Jones, who's starting 18th, and he's $7,000. But, I mean, JGR, every driver's on the table. But I kind of like the fact that they're starting 1, 2, and 3. I mean, at Daytona, I think in 2019, they finished 1, 2, 3.
Yes, for the Daytona 500, they did, in fact, finish 1, 2, 3. Truex was not part of that. That was Eric Jones finishing third in that one. Denny Hamlin won it, and Kyle Busch finished second. We already mentioned Denny Hamlin has won back-to-back Daytona 500s. He's done pretty well on plate tracks. It hasn't really translated all that well to Talladega, which is a little interesting to me. And in case you're thinking, oh, well, I'll just get Truex for laps led, here the pole sitter doesn't, laps led aren't going to be that big of a thing this week. First of all, there's only 188 scheduled laps in the race, and secondly, with the way that they race, it's really kind of hard for a guy to just go out and lead a, like, half the laps. Like, yeah, you could see a guy easily lead, you know, 30-35 laps, but that's still only like 1/6 of the race,
right?
Whereas opposed to, you know, it Atlanta, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Harvick lead like half the laps. That's when laps led come in to be a factor. So, you know, Truex is in a good spot. Denny Hamlin's in a good spot. I would probably take Hamlin over Truex if I'm going with guys on the front row. Kyle Busch is in play. Not too fond of Eric Jones' starting spot. 18th doesn't really have the best history here. You typically want to avoid guys that are starting mid-pack. You know,
the 18th, could this be another week we fade Eric Jones? I mean, it almost bit us in the ass last week, but luckily,
I mean, that's what turned us around last week, because everybody was losing money because we didn't play enough Denny Hamlin last week, because that came out of kind of nowhere, basically. If you look at Eric Jones' stats in three Geico 500s, he's got an average finish of 30.3. In six Talladega races, his average finish of 28.2. So he tends to be a guy that just, for whatever reason, gets caught up in the wrecks here. So, I can't in good faith tell you not to play Eric Jones, but I can just tell you that typically starting mid-pack has not been a very good spot for a DFS play.
All right, we'll briefly talk, I guess, Hendrick. Chase Elliott is the most expensive driver at $10,400. He's starting 11th. Who else we got? We got Jimmy Johnson starting 4th right next to Kyle Busch. He's $8,800. Not a terrible price. I mean, how are you feeling about the Chevys this week? I mean, everyone's in play, but...
So it's interesting, because usually Hendrick shows up at these super speedways and they have flat-out amazing speed. That's why we see Byron has been on the pole here. Chase has been on the pole here recently. In fact, I think like 70% of the last handful of restrictor plate races that have been run, Hendrick has swept the front row, I think. Now, obviously, that didn't happen here. There was no qualifying. It was just random draw. Alex Bowman, by the way, starting 8th again for his, I think, 4th, maybe
4th straight race. Yeah. I think the odds of that happening were like 1 in 21,000.
Yeah, something like that is pretty crazy. Chase has been pretty strong here at Talladega. He did win this race last year. Granted, it was under caution, but he did. No, it still counts. He did win it. He's got 3 top 5 finishes in the last 4 spring, you know, early season Dega races. Jimmy Johnson is a guy that just seems to get caught up in the crashes here more than not. William Byron finished I guess Alex Bowman finished second to Chase Elliott last spring. Byron is another guy who gets kind of caught up in the crashes here. So if I'm going to look for guys that are a little safer from the Hendrick camp, if that makes any sense this week, it's going to be Bowman and Chase. But again, anybody's in play, I'm just going probably heavier on Chase and Bowman, and both of them are starting in 11th and 8th, respectively. And those have been pretty decent starting spots. 8th has had a little bit more issues than 11th. But again, if you're starting, historically speaking, if you're starting in the top 10 at Talladega over 101 races, you've got a nearly 75% chance of winning the race. So...
All right, so we'll go to the last of the big four teams, SHR. One guy I really like this week, who I was really heavy on last week, and it did finally pay off, Eric Almirola, starting 15th, yes. And he's only 6,800 after a really huge week last week.
Yeah, Almirola had an absolute stud of a week last week. And fun fact, in the last 8 Talladega races, Eric Almirola has 7 top 10 finishes.
Yeah, he's been really solid here. Like, he including always just a win. He manages to find his way to get to the front and run inside the top 5. It's okay.
Yeah, and keep in mind, a couple of years ago, he was like a half a turn away from winning the Daytona 500 before he got basically blocked on a run, or tried to block a run, and that didn't go well for him. He did win at Talladega in the fall a couple of years ago when SHR basically just ran away with everything. They had the 4-car breakaway that just was ridiculous. So Eric Almirola is going to be a very popular play at that price tag and be a guy that's starting, you know, mid-pack that you can trust to get up there and give you some place differential. So that guy I really like. Kevin Harvick has been, hit and miss here a little bit. If he can stay running up front, he should be okay. But that's kind of a big if. Clint Bowyer. He tends to be a guy that gets caught up in wrecks here kind of more often than not. I think my favorite play out of SHR is probably Eric Almirola.
What about Cole Custer?
I mean, he's starting in the back.
Yeah.
So that's a great, cheap play. There's going to be a lot of Cole Custer probably because 28th has been a pretty decent starting spot historically. That's about where you want to start targeting guys in the back of the field on either site. So I'm going to stick with the two cheapest guys and go with Almirola and Cole Custer out of SHR.
All right. What about Chip Ganassi this week? You got Matt Kenseth starting 13th, Kurt Busch starting P7. They're both 8,700 and 8,500 respectively.
I really like Kurt Busch this week. He's got an average finish of 5.5 in the last 4 early season races here at Talladega. Okay. Nice. 4 top 10 finishes. So that bodes pretty well for him. In the last 8 races, he's got 5 top 10 finishes. So he's just another guy who's just really a really solid plate racer that kind of tends to fly under the radar. And also, historically speaking, the 7th starting spot has ranked 6th on DraftKings and 3rd on FanDuel in terms of scoring average over the last 5 races. So if you're looking at that as a tool, that's something to look at. He's mid-tier on DK. So, yeah, I do like Kurt Busch. Kenseth, I've been pretty underwhelmed here by Kenseth the last several races. And his history here isn't really all that great either.
All right. I don't know. Who else could we talk about in terms of team? Richard Childress Racing. Yep. Tyler Reddick starting 16th. I mean, he was gem.
He was a gem. By the way, the reason why he wound up losing by like 4 seconds in third place,
because he thought the race was over.
Right? He thought the race was over when the white flag waved. So that's why he laid off the gas. And if you were watching the race, you saw him all of a sudden go from like 1.5 seconds back to like 5 seconds back. And he thought the race was over. So, so there was that. I'm kind of torn on Tyler Reddick this week, because historically in this starting spot, it has not gone well for the driver that's been in the starting spot in terms of scoring. Now, I know that can change on a week, on a base, one good race changes that and whatnot. He does have the aggressive driving style that typically does well at plate tracks. He also has done pretty well at Talladega in his Xfinity days. So I'm a little bit torn here on Tyler Reddick simply because of where he's starting. And that mid-pack starting spot really kind of has me cautious. So I would play him in some GPPs, but I would not say he's a cash game lock like he has been the last couple of races.
So you, I mean, Austin Dillon's a really good plate racer, and he's 5,800. He's starting one spot behind Reddick. So if you
however,
you prefer, okay.
Ironically, if you look at the starting spot, like you all will see the starting spot chart get posted in the playbook, the one that we keep referencing. Historically speaking, on DraftKings, the 16th starting spot is well below average. It averages 11.9 points per race. The 17th starting spot averages 37 points a race, which is well above average. So I don't know what the difference is between that one spot. And keep in mind, this does not take into account who was in those starting spots. It just takes into account that starting spot and what the points produced were. It does not matter who started there, how they qualified there, if it was set by owner points, whatever. It's just a pure starting spot to point thing. So if I'm going to go with one RCR guy this week, it's probably going to be Austin Dillon.
Okay. And then real quick, I guess among the bigger name drivers, I've got two left that we can talk about, and then we can just start identifying our value plays. But Ricky Stenhouse Jr., starting P20, he's 8,400. Great plate racer, Matt DiBenedetto. You don't like him on mile-and-a-half tracks, but you love him on short tracks, and you love him on super speedways. He's starting 23rd, and he's 7,800. These guys are obviously really solid plays this week, correct?
They are. Yeah, I mean, either one of them is fine. DiBenedetto led, I think, like 49 laps of the Daytona 500 in 2019, I believe. He's been in contention for some super speedway wins. He is a pretty good plate racer. Stenhouse, obviously, the last couple of wins he's had in the Cup Series have come at Talladega and Daytona. And his aggressive style of driving actually works really well at plate races because he sees a hole and he gets to the hole. He's not quite as, you know, it just works. For whatever reason, being aggressive at a plate track works. I've heard numerous drivers say that the more aggressive you are, the better chance you have of actually winning the races, which sounds counterintuitive. But so, yeah, I mean, they're both in play. I don't know that I would put them in cash games with where they're starting. They're starting a little too high for me to put in cash games, but they are GPP plays.
Okay, cool. Is there anyone else among the mid or top tier that you want to touch on? Because I'm just ready to start talking about these cash game plays where you can just leave a ton of money on the table.
Yeah, well, okay, so it depends on how we're breaking this down, because, like, Bubba Wallace is kind of mid-tier, but I actually really do like him this week.
Brendan Gaughan. Even for cash?
Let's see, Bubba is starting 24th. It's a little harder to get around it in cash. I mean, historically, on both sides, that spot has produced average points back. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're losing things to the average. But Bubba Wallace has actually been a sneaky, decent plate racer in his career. He finished second in the Daytona 500 a couple of years ago. He always just seems to be up in the mix late in the race. And also keep in mind, by the way, folks, this is technically a home race for Bubba Wallace. He's from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so with all the stuff that's been going on, he's also continued to show really, really well in these races. He had another pretty solid race at Homestead last weekend. So yeah, I mean, he's a good plate racer. He's starting in a pretty decent starting spot, even for cash games. Maybe a little fringy for cash games, but certainly in a GPP play. And then Brendan Gaughan at 7,600 on DK is a guy you just got to lock and play.
Yeah, he's starting
39th. The guy is always in contention for top 10s at plate tracks. I don't know what it is about how they set up that car, but that guy always returns value for you at these things. So, and then Daniel Suarez has kind of a big gap here between DK and FanDuel. He's 7,300 on DK and 4,500 on FanDuel. The only reason he's really in play is because he's starting so dang far back. The car doesn't really matter this week, so we can finally play Daniel Suarez. He's starting 37th, so that's a pretty popular that'll be a pretty popular play. So with that, we can move on to the cheaper guys. I mean, Ty Dillon's always in play. He's a little bit more mid-tier than a cheap play, but Ty Dillon is generally always in play.
I think we may have overlooked one guy because at 9,700, Christopher Bell is starting 35th, and that's a pretty good cash play.
Yeah, that's true. We did overlook Christopher Bell as the de facto fifth JGR car. Yeah, I mean, he's starting 35th, and he's the FanDuel finally got wise to the place differential, too, and raised his raised his value because last week
those wasn't he like jerks.
Wasn't he like still in the $6,000 range on FanDuel last week?
Yeah, something like he didn't cut some people super cheap.
Yeah, on FanDuel, and then he was like 9,300 on DK. So, yeah, I mean, Bell has had a pretty solid history here in Xfinity as well. So he'll be in play. So yeah, it's still entirely possible that you put together a cash lineup that still only leaves like $8K on the table, and you don't have a $10,000 driver in your lineup.
Currently, mine, and I'm fine giving this away because it's just a cash lineup, whatever. Mine is Christopher Bell starting 35th. He's 9,700. Then I got Timmy Hill, who we talked about earlier. He's starting 38th. He's 5,300. Ryan Preece, 31st, 6,200. Michael McDowell, really good plate racer. He's starting 26th, which I'm a little bit worried about, but he's only 6,300. Then you got Brennan Gaughan starting 39th. Ty Dillon starting 33rd. That leaves $7,800 on the table, and I'm perfectly fine with that in cash games.
Yep. I mean, there's literally people. You will see lineups that all they do is go through and click on the last. If you're on DK, they will click on the last six qualifying spots, put them in their lineup, and set it.
And even if one or two of your drivers, if they wreck, it's not the end all be all.
Right, because most people are going to have. There's not going to be a single clean lineup by the end of this race. I can almost guarantee that.
Yeah, I mean, the one that takes down the 250 grand in the DK's big GPP, like yeah, that's gonna probably have a clean lineup, and they'll have drivers all finishing in the top 10, but. Really, if you're playing cash, it's just start the guys at the back because if they can avoid the wrecks, they're going to get the PD.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If they can avoid the wreck and half the field wrecks out, guess who just got a free 20 points of PD?
Yeah.
That would be your entire lineup.
Is there anyone else that you really wanted to discuss in depth? I know I kind of like breezed over McDowell and Preece. McDowell's a really good plate racer. Preece finished third in the last spring race, I believe. But, I mean, Ryan Newman is at his first super speedway since the horrific wreck at Daytona.
I'm a little – I actually think he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Just because he's Ryan Newman and he's tough as nails and he doesn't really let anything bother him. So, yeah, I think he'll be all right. They've also made some safety changes to the cars since then. There is going to be a slightly different package on the cars than there was at Daytona, which should reduce the horsepower a little bit and also keep the wreck that happened at Daytona from happening this time. We will see what actually happens. But, yeah, I mean, I think I'm fine with Newman. I like his price better on DraftKings at $6,700 than I do on FanDuel at $8,000. Now, he is starting mid-pack, but if he can sit there in the top 10 like he's capable of doing, he's done that half the times in the last Talladega race. So I don't really have a problem with Newman. Ryan Preece, like you said, really good plate racer here. John Hunter Nemechek, again, aggressive kind of style of driving.
Still super cheap, too.
He is still super cheap. 22 is a little bit too close to be
in
play, but GPPs, you can throw them in there. Boucher starting 21st is a little hard to get around for cash games. But yeah, I mean, we've got guys like Greg Alding's in play this week, BJ McLeod's in play this week, Quinn Hoff's in play this week, JJ Yaley, Joey Gase, Garrett Smithley, Brendan Poole, Timmy Hill. Like, all of these guys are in play this week because if they avoid the big one, they get position differential.
What I like about Greg Golding is, one, he's the cheapest driver on the slate, and that typically doesn't matter if you're going to leave a ton of money left over anyway. But he's running in the Xfinity race on Saturday, and he won the Xfinity race out of nowhere last spring in 2019 as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's clearly capable of avoiding stuff. And, yeah, I mean, the salaries don't necessarily really matter this week. And, again, DK dropped their salaries quite a bit. I mean, the most expensive dude is 10-4. So the salaries won't really be an issue this week on really either site. So, yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much covers it again. I know we're talking in a lot of, like, vague terms here, and basically everybody's in play, but that's just the style of race it is.
Yeah.
And watch it on Sunday, you will understand.
Yeah.
Like, wreck's going to happen, and so we can't tell you who's going to wreck. Obviously, if I knew that, then I would sit here and tell you the only six drivers you need to know, and then you'd be fine, and I'd look like a genius. But yeah, I mean, that pretty well covers it. It basically comes more down to starting spots than anything this week.
Right.
Essentially, anybody starting basically 13th through 26th is no-goes for cash play. You could play one of them for GPPs, two of them for GPPs. But the guys for cash game plays, you're going to want to play like one guy from the top 10, basically, or just everybody 28th or further back.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what you do.
And then I guess the other thing I'll say is, like, don't lineup check for this race, because there's between the wrecks and just the amount of passing that is constantly going on. I mean, like, if one guy gets stuck in the middle, he's just going to go in the middle lane. He's going to probably fade right back, and he's going to lose about 10 spots. So it's like there's mm-hmm. it's so tough to track for DFS sites, because, like, the positions are constantly changing. Definitely just set your lineups, enjoy the race, and then check on them at the end. And
I mean, to give you an idea of how much passing happens, Joey Logano leads the field in quality passes per race. Quality passing is passing any car driving in the top 15 positions under green flag racing. Okay? Normally, you see like a max of 50 or 60. You know, at Bristol, I think they were up over 100, right? Because it's a short track, there's more passing, whatnot. Joey Logano leads the field this week at 306.8 quality passes a race. Yeah. That's how much passing among the top. And by the way, that's like he's got the best top 15 rate too at 84.8%.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I stand corrected, actually. Kyle Busch has the most quality passes per race at 314.3. But like, there's more than a dozen guys that are well over 200 quality passes a race. So
yep.
There's a lot of shifting back and forth. It depends on which lane has the advantage one time or another. And also, if you think, oh, we've made it through 150 laps of this race and it's been pretty tame, don't line up check. The last 30 laps are going to be an absolute disaster. Because, you'll notice that, like, a lot of the wrecks happen at the end of stage one, or they'll happen at the end of stage two as they're fighting for stage points. And then stage three will start. You'll be like, oh, this is pretty tame. I don't know what they were talking about. And then we'll get to lap like 150, and then like half the field's going to not finish the race between the last 30 laps of the race.
Yeah.
So
I think
it's like, the podcast.
I mean, we went over 80 minutes last week. We're probably going to be under 45 this week. But I mean, I think for a podcast or a race where every driver's in play, I think we summed up everybody as well as we could, and strategies as well.
Yeah, and so again, even if a guy doesn't make the playbook, it doesn't mean they're not in play. I'm just putting the best possible guys you could play in the playbook. Otherwise, I could legitimately write about 40 guys, and some of them would just say one sentence and be like, well, they're in the race at Talladega, they have a shot at winning. Yeah. Like, that's basically what half the things would say. So just general strategy notes, mostly. And there are some very good plate racers that you're going to want to focus on if you want solid floors from some of these guys. But place differential is going to be the big stat to pay attention to.
Yeah. All right, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you and to the FA Nation for Talladega.
Best of luck, FA Nation, and enjoy the race, Dan, and don't get COVID.
I'm going to do my very best, and I will do my part not to. I will wear my mask. I will wash my hands. I will have sanitizer.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, man. Best of luck, guys.
Best of luck, FA Nation.